Wow, this always takes a long time to get started. Why does it take so long? I don't even know if I can blame Aussie Bandwidth for that. Speaking of which, as much as everyone likes to take the piss out of Australian Bandwidth, someone who might have been Scott Helm was taking the piss out of Australian Bandwidth the other day. And I was like, here, hold my beer. Let me actually run a speed test for you. And many people don't realize this, but there is a way of getting exemplary bandwidth here in Australia. And just let me find this. I've literally just tweeted the link to this, so I know people are joining in and waiting. Now, where was this? What speed did I get? And how did I achieve this magic? Here we go. 549 megabits down, 62 up. Man, who cares about that? 549 down. So I can actually get 549 megabits down. All I've got to do is drop off the Wi-Fi and roll back to 4G, which is kind of infuriating, but here we are. Incidentally, for those of you outside of Australia, so basically our gold standard, if you like, for bandwidth in Australia, it's not even the gold standard. It's basically like everyone is now on the NBN, the National Broadband Network. And the premise of the National Broadband Network is over the last couple of years, this was rolled out to just about every household in Australia, which is meant to be sort of our, we just went blurry. It's meant to be our future of broadband. It's a Logitech Brio camera, and it's normally pretty good. Oh, we're back. That was weird. Anyway, NBN. So the joy of the NBN is it's meant to give us fast broadband across the country. It's a little bit up and down, and also Australia defines fast as 100 megabits. And I know there's people in other parts of the world laughing at me now, so. Yep, thank you. So I was maxing out 100 megabits. Here, I max out at about 60 megabit. So I've just gone, yeah, give me the plan that has the most bandwidth, 60 megabits. But apparently, we are now about to start seeing gigabit plans, which is fantastic, except for the fact that the line where I'm at is limited, obviously, to 60 megabits. So anyway, sometime in the future, it might be better. Now, as I've been doing with these live weekly updates, I'm reversing the order a little bit. I'm talking about sponsor first. So sponsor this week is NordVPN again. They've been there the last couple of weeks as well. They're talking about faster VPNs. And I am going to come back and talk about Nord in general in a moment because I have had a bunch of feedback about that. But one of the interesting things about VPNs is like we've all got this perception that as soon as we go VPN, everything's going to slow down because we've got to encrypt somewhere here on the client device over to an edge node somewhere of theirs, decrypt, back out over the internet, and inevitably you're routing around longer routes. But of course, one thing with a VPN is that they do start to have control over the routing of your traffic as well. So Nord got a few funky tricks, which in my testing at least, had the speeds at a very, very similar mark to if I did not have the VPN turned on, which is good. Now, they're talking about remote work and browsing needs, which is fantastic. Obviously, things like remote work is a biggie at the moment for many of us, and VPNs do make a big difference there. I have had a bunch of feedback about some of the rest of Nord's messaging, and I am talking to them pretty much on a daily basis at the moment about trying to address some of that. So I'm really conscious of people's feedback, but I'm also seeing a really nice underlying product as well. So my preference would be to see them actually get that messaging a little bit more on point than what it has been. There's been a few references, and look, if I don't say it, it'll come up in the comments anyway, about their security incident last year, which it's one of these things where it doesn't matter what it is, but if you're a company that works in the security industry and anything at all happens security related, you're going to have headlines. We've seen 1Password and LastPass and those sorts of organizations in headlines before as well for things which ultimately the headline has not really been commensurate with the actual risk. And that was sort of the situation with the Nord thing last year as well. In fact, I think I remember at the time, before any sponsorship, commenting on that as well. But it's the internet, and everyone has got a view on the internet, including me. So I'm conscious of that. Anyway, stay tuned because I do want to do more stuff about Nord and the messaging later on. All right, now, I do have a list of things. What I've sort of been starting to do, and I can see some of your comments coming too, so I will actually answer things like plus aliasing there. And please do drop the comments in. I don't have to go anywhere because, well, actually, I can actually go some places now, and I'll talk about that. But for the most part, I'm not going anywhere beyond places that are very, very close to home. I've been sort of starting off each week just giving people a bit of oversight as to oversight, overview, insight as to what it's like in terms of the COVID-19 situation here where we are. And we have been tracking along exceptionally well. So we, I guess, being two different definitions, either we as Australia, as a country, has been going very, very well. We as a state has been going exceptionally well. So I was checking out the COVID Australia app again this morning. So we're now down to 474 active cases in the entire country. 25 million people in Australia, so 474 is tracking pretty well. We did pass through 100 deaths, I think this week, maybe the week before, at 103 now, which is tragic. Empirically on the numbers, though, is pretty bloody amazing. What's exceptionally amazing is when we look at our state of Queensland here. So we've got, I think it's about 5.1 million people. It's over 5 million people. We have six, I want to pick that finger, six people in Queensland at the moment who are active, which is just absolutely remarkable. Imagine that you've got a demographic of over 5 million people and six of them are known to have COVID-19. And I'll talk about some of the ways life returning to normal in a moment, but with those numbers, you can imagine that that makes a hell of a big difference. We have had seven deaths. Tragically, we did have a death this week. And very tragically, it was a 30-year-old guy, which is our youngest death in the country. It does seem like he had a whole bunch of pre-existing conditions. The news is reporting epilepsy and asthma, and I would imagine that things like asthma in particular, probably not too helpful when you have any sort of pneumonia-like symptoms. And it looks like he wasn't, they didn't even know he was positive until after he died. So there's sort of some oddities around that situation. But on the whole, the state's just done fantastically well. And, you know, like I was just watching these numbers tumble. It was 12 people a week ago that were active. So that is remarkable. And it is, it's actually causing quite a few political bun fights is really the right way to put it here in Australia, because you've got this one state that's our third most populous state in the country, and the two beneath that, New South Wales and Victoria, so Sydney and Melbourne, the capitals there, you can come and go between those cities, but our Queensland Premier is like, no, we don't want you coming in here. You know, like we literally don't want to run the risk of having an infection across borders. And that's making things quite tricky, because you've got Queensland being sort of the holiday capital of Australia, and lots of people wanting to come here and spend their money, because let's face it, they can't go overseas anymore. And then having to sort of trade off going, well, we need the tourism and we need the financial stimulus. We also need to not get sick. So that's sort of interesting the way that's going. So we really, really need to see the numbers come down in the other states, I think, before the Premier lets us back in. Lets other people back in before they let me go. I want to go snowboarding in a couple of months, so I really need these borders to open back up. Now, as part of this, and this brings me into more topical things, I went to a restaurant for the first time in probably a couple of months. When was this? On the 25th, 4 days ago. And I tweeted it, and I was really excited, and I tweeted two things, and I didn't think it would turn into anything stupid, but it is on the internet, so here you go. So I tweeted a photo, went out for breakfast, fantastic looking breakfast here, and also tweeted a photo of a form that we needed to fill out. Now, the form says, due to Queensland Government COVID-19 regulations, seated patrons must complete the contact information listed below. Thank you for your cooperation in these challenging times. We greatly appreciate your support. Date, time, name, address, mobile phone number, and signature. And I really didn't even think anything of it. I had seen these forms on other tables in previous days as I'd wandered around. But being the internet, I did get a bunch of feedback about privacy and data breaches. And there was all, where do I begin? It was people very upset at the premise that you didn't have freedom anymore. It's like, no one's forcing me to go to the restaurant and eat the eggs Benedict in the photo, which were delicious, by the way. I have the option. I can go there and I can eat the food, and there is a Queensland Government requirement that I leave contact information, or I can not. Actually, I can still go there. I could take it away. I could just go, hey, I don't really want to leave you my personal information. I would like to take it away and go and sit down by the beach, which is what I normally do. This was exceptional to take a seat. But the comments around this isn't freedom and government control are just batshit crazy. They're absolutely ridiculous, not least of which because if I went to the restaurant and the bloke sitting on the table next to me tested positive later on, I would like to know that. That would be very important information for me because not only would I go and get tested, but I might be extra cautious around my family, around my friends, around my mum and dad who are in their 70s. And to say that in one case someone said, look, I just leave fake information. It's like, so you could sit next to someone and then contract this and then go and spread it around, but because selfish reasons, you don't want to leave legitimate information, which is just absolutely ridiculous. The government requirement is that the restaurants keep this for 28 days. It is obviously just on paper. They are meant to then destroy it. A few people made the point, the restaurant could start stalking you as a result. And I'm sure there are cases where there have been very malicious activities as a result of leaving personal information at a restaurant. Now, the same thing could happen when you book a table. Certainly here, if I actually wanted to book to go to a restaurant, I would leave my name and my phone number. And they're sort of the two things people are going to start stalking you with. Now, okay, the address is another step further, granted. But, you know, the premise of never leave personal information, just it didn't work before if you wanted to go to a restaurant. Now then, in terms of the data breach thing, we're really going to be dependent on restaurants themselves obviously disposing of this stuff properly. It'll be interesting. I've got a bit of a rapport with the girls that run this restaurant, so maybe we should ask them, you know, how are you doing this? How do you store the data? How will you destroy the data later on? But again, if I was worried about it, I just wouldn't go and sit in the restaurant. You have this choice. And particularly people from other parts of the world that have just got massive death rates and second waves and all this sort of thing, to then jump up and down about not having freedom whilst I'm able to sort of wander down the beach and sit there and have a nice meal with family around other people. That's the internet. Anyway. All right, I do have other things here. I was just noticing because I make like bullet pointed notes before I do these talks. Under this thing about the discussion here with, you know, leaving your contact details, I've made a point here. People from the UK with 37,000 deaths are saying, "I'm glad it's not like that here." Really? Or if you're from the US and saying, "I'm glad it's not like that here," where you got to leave your personal information, that's just past 100,000 deaths. Anyway, let's move on. Let's move on because it's getting kind of political. There's a question here. Might be off topic, but have I been prone to plus emails, e.g. email plus service at gmail.com will trigger email at gmail.com to be notified about Pwnage as well? So the short answer is no. The longer answer is there's a very good reason. In fact, many very good reasons it doesn't. One of the reasons is, let's do it from very high level and then we'll get all the way down to the mechanical implementation of it. And just incidentally, there is actually a user voice, the number one most voted request in user voice. So if you go to Have I Been Pwned, let me just check exactly what it is under here. HaveIBeenPwned.com, and then you go down to about, and then you go down to suggest a feature. The number one requested feature is to do this. So here's the first sort of philosophical problem. There is no formal spec, RFC, anything like that for plus aliasing, which is the colloquial term used for this. So when someone says, could you please take one email address and strip a bit out of it and assume that it's the same as another email address with that bit stripped out, we're basically being dependent on the email provider implementing that pattern and it not being two different addresses. Because what we're really saying is if there's a plus in it, then everything, including the plus and after it, is the same as the alias without that bit. And that works for Gmail and it works for Outlook.com and it probably works for others as well, but I don't think it necessarily works for everywhere. And okay, the likelihood of having two different people with two different email addresses and one of them's got the same as the first one but with a plus and something else after it, and then they get a false positive on Have I Been Pwned and see someone else's data, the likelihood of that is very, very, very small. But you see the problem. And then you go down the rabbit hole where that logic extends further. So for example, Outlook.com ignores dots. I'm not sure if Gmail does as well. But if you're like Jimbo@Outlook.com, you could be Jim.Bo@Outlook.com and it would still go to the same mailbox. So do you start then applying rules that are, again, provider-specific, not part of the spec, and cascading it down to everyone? So that's sort of the first philosophical problem. This is not a spec which we can just go, okay, we're going to do this with for everyone. Second problem is that I could normalize the email addresses. So I could take, in this example, email plus service. So I could take out the plus service and then it would just be email@gmail.com. The problem is that people who use this pattern, and I have used this pattern in the past myself as well, people who use this pattern, they want to know what the plus alias is. So for example, let's say it's you know, jimbo+netflix@gmail.com. And then there's a credential stuffing list or something. And I load that into Have I Been Pwned? And Jimbo gets a notification and he goes, I want to know what the plus is because I want to know who leaked my email. And that is a perfectly valid premise for Jimbo to take. Problem is that there then needs to be a construct to record this. So no longer is it just there is an email address and Have I Been Pwned? And then there is a collection of things that are breached against it. It needs to be there is an email address. And then for each one of those breaches, was there plus aliasing used? And if so, what was the value? And what you need to be able to do then is you need to be able to look up by either. You need to be able to look up by jimbo@gmail.com. And then it comes back and it says, hey, there was a credential stuffing list breach here. The alias used was Netflix. Okay, useful information. But you also need to be able to go, what about jimbo+netflix@gmail.com? And you need to be able to search by that. And now suddenly you're needing to search by something which is not an indexed value, and you're also needing to add that plus aliasing somewhere into a data construct that at the moment doesn't exist. So see how you sort of start to go down the rabbit hole? Now it gets even worse. One of the ways that I could do this is I could just have two different email addresses. Like I could have jimbo@gmail.com, that is one record. jimbo+netflix@gmail.com, that is another record. But then again, you don't have the association between them. You don't have this concept of plus aliasing represented in the results. Now, I've got 9.6 something billion records and Have I Been Pwned. I'd have to go through those and actually implement that concept, which that in itself is non-trivial. So the point is that the investment would be very, very high. Now, what's the return? Because ultimately, everything is an ROI. And that is not necessarily an investment in dollars, but it's an investment in my time, of which I don't have very much. So what's the return? Every single time I go through and I look at a data breach and I look at how many people have got a plus in their email address, it's consistently around the 0.03% mark. Now, that's in the user voice discussion there as well. Every time I check this again, it is exceptionally rare. Now, the reason why that user voice is the most voted thing on, or the reason why that idea is the most voted thing on Have I Been Pwned, is because people who use this pattern are passionate about it because it works really well for them. Like I say, I've certainly used it in the past myself. So I get that it's important to individuals, but the problem is when I look at all of the things that I want to do, not even just with Have I Been Pwned, but in life, including spending time with my kids, and I look at it and go, here's something that's going to take a lot of work and it's going to benefit 0.03% of people. It's very, very hard to make that argument. So I'm sorry, that's probably not the answer you wanted. I've left the user voice there because I want people to vote on it. I want it to pop to the surface. And if I get the opportunity to invest more in the future, that's something I could look at. And I also want to make sure that if you vote on this, you're now in the system, right? So if I do this later on, you'll get notified. So if it's important to you, go and vote on it. No promises it will ever be done, but at least you'll get an email if it is. Another point here, Christian. 100 megabit equals fast? Yeah. Got 300 megabit here in Norway and can get 1 gigabit. Thanks, Christian. That really helps. I feel much better for that. Just go and look at some of my photos about how nice it looks when I go outdoors. Now, actually, that said, for the most part, I find that the 60 megabits that I get here, sort of on my desktop PC kind of thing on the Wi-Fi, it's usually fine. No problems with streaming video or any sort of stuff like that. I've got, what does Ubiquiti say now? I've got something like 45 odd devices here on the local Wi-Fi. No problems with any of that. The time it really hits me, and also my kids are too young to be doing too much stuff on it, but the time it really hits me is when someone sends me a freaking massive data breach and it's like, hey, here's a 500 gigabyte file. So, okay, well, I'm not going to be looking at that today. But that is also a bit exceptional too. John, one of those flat whites would be great. Thanks. The coffee is nice. Always a good weekly update, even all the way down here, just inside the border at Tjugen. Yeah, so this is an interesting thing. So John's comments, so this goes back to traveling between states in Australia. We basically have border towns. So Tjugen, Coolangatta down, literally a 30-minute drive that way, is a border town. So you have people needing to go in and out day after day because they drop the kids off on one side and then they work on the other side or whatever else it may be. So it is actually, it's a bit of a weird thing to divide the state down that way. Apparently, the last time the states actually had any sort of border control was many, 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 many decades ago. I've certainly never seen it. And it was something to do with like fruit flies or something like that. But yeah, I was even talking to a mate yesterday down in Victoria, and he said he wanted to come up to the Sunshine Coast, which is a couple of hours that way, during the winter because it's cold down there and it's warm up here. And I was like, mate, you know, you can't go anywhere yet, right? Like he was talking sort of start of July timeframe. So I don't like your chances for that. Anyway, we'll see. Gordon, if a service does not support Plus, you could be emailing someone else who has that alias for that. No, yeah, that's the kind of the point I was making before. Oh, it's Brian Lagunas. Someone in my email thing, there's a difference of a dot. Yeah, so I've heard this before, right? Like I've heard a bunch of people say, I'm getting email meant for someone else because there's one tiny little variance in it. And things like a dot, I'm just not convinced that means it's going to be a different person. Kent, I still prefer a custom domain with a wildcard alias that sends anything not matching legit address to a catch-all. Look, that works well too. Obviously, there's a little bit more setup there than just going and getting a Gmail account and starting to add a plus. Now, at least in a case like that, in Have I Been Pwned, you can do a domain search and then you see the aliases. So if people would just get rid of plus aliasing and just have their own custom domain, it would actually solve a lot of problems. All right, so other things on my list here. I got some feedback about Have I Been Pwned. Oh, my God, this one here. Okay, so if there are little ears in the car, time to turn it down for the next probably 60 seconds. So subject is. This is an actual email I got. Subject is, what the fuck, Troy? Dude, forgive my frustration, but the damn world ain't computer savvy like you. When you lure someone, two separate words, someone is one word, mate. When you lure someone to your site, if you have someone, and then he's done it with one word. Isn't that interesting? Consistency, mate. If you have someone put their email address in and I'm, lowercase I, no apostrophe, expecting a list of possible problems, I don't want a fucking sales pitch, but results of my email. Then you might make some money. And then all caps. Again, the goddamn world isn't savvy, okay? College should have taught you that. We don't really have college in Australia. It's university. But anyway, that's only the first paragraph. Next paragraph. I'm bent because my bank was hacked. Dumb it down, dude, so stupid fucks like me can get somewhere. Then I may employ your service. Whatever, two separate words again, the hell you do. I, next sentence, lowercase either, gave up when your brilliant code produced no results, but some dumb shit about you being corn pone. I don't think I read that properly the first time. Some dumb shit about you being one word, corn pone. Come on, man, I want to see where my email results. This I tweeted earlier about Poe's law, and Poe's law is this law that you just sort of get to the point where it's very difficult to tell parody from reality. And in fact, I tweeted this earlier today. I'll come back and talk about that actually, because it wasn't on my list, but it's hilarious. And this email, this is so far on the ridiculous end that it's more amusing than insulting. But I do get a bunch of emails like this where it's like, hey, there is a free service. You can go and use this free service or not use it. And it's kind of useful. A lot of people seem to like it. About 200,000 people a day at the moment come to Have I Been Pwned too, by the way. Fan mail like this. Man, who are these people? So I don't reply to mail like this. And I did obfuscate the guy's name, but I thought that was worth a share. And there are 1,000 likes on it as well. So people obviously enjoyed reading that. Okay. So since we're talking about Poe's law, here's the thing I shared just before. It was hilarious. Okay, so there is a device you can buy to address the dangers of 5G. Now, there's a Twitter account here, 5G EMF radiation protection. Protect yourself from 5G EMF radiation. Protect yourself from 5G EMF radiation protection. Two protections, a bit odd. New 5G BioShield is the result of the most advanced technology currently available for balancing radiation. Now, if you want to go and read this account and have a bit of a laugh, this is a Twitter account called BioShield 5G. And this popped up on my radar because someone linked me into this. And I'll talk about the Poe's law a bit, then I'll come back and talk about what I've since learned about this device. And I've said the BioShield 5G is a manifestation of Poe's law. Now, Poe's law is, without a clear indication of the author's intent, it is impossible to create a parody of extreme views so obviously exaggerated that it cannot be mistaken by some readers for a sincere expression of the views being parodied. In other words, shit's gotten so weird on the internet that it's impossible to tell whether it's actually legitimate or not. Now, turns out, apparently this is actually legitimate. And now when I say, legitimate is a bad word. It's that they are doing it seriously. That's probably the best word. And what seems to have happened here is that this is a 300-pound BioShield that experts say is just a cheap USB drive with a sticker on it. Now, I actually left my tweet thread at this position, so it seems like my mate Ken Munro in the UK has pulled this thing apart, and his tweet here says, we dismantled it. The 500-pound 5G BioShield is referenced in a report by Glastonbury Town Council. It's meant to be a quantum holographic catalyzer technology. Everyone with me? Good. It's a 5-pound, 128 meg, yes, meg, USB key with a sticker on it. There you go. Maybe the 5G stuff isn't actually so real. So that's hilarious. I'm going to share that later on. He's up to 942 likes. When did he tweet that? Just last night. So, fun times. Now, I had a couple of other comments here. So Kent's made a point here. Time to get head to the IETF and get yourself an RFC on those email providers. Good luck with that. Christian about, have I been pwned? Have you ever gotten breaches which contain 2FA time-limited one-time password secret keys that are not encrypted? I don't think so, not off the top of my head. I do often see auth tokens. In fact, I'm going to talk about recent breaches in a moment, and one of the ones yesterday had auth tokens in it. Now, then, of course, there's always the question of what is the validity period? So are those auth tokens still usable, in which case they get you into the account? But look, if they were, oh no, I get your question now. So Christian's saying, is it the secret key which would then be used to generate the time limited one time password? So no, I don't believe I've seen those anywhere. Otherwise, that would effectively be your circumvention of the second factor. Now, there's still a question whether you can circumvent the first factor being the password. But then again, given the way some of the passwords have been stored, particularly in breaches this week, that would be very possible. So I hope that actually answers your question properly this time, Christian. So in terms of breaches this week, well, there's been a few. What tends to happen is every now and then someone pops up and they're like, hey, here's a whole bunch of stuff. And it's stuff that they've either been hoarding or it's been released somewhere else and then they've just gotten a copy of it. But it does tend to come in ebbs and flows. So there's quite a few breaches this week. So the first one here is there's a hacking forum, nulled.ch. This is different to the one that was nulled.cr that had a breach last year, something like that. So left publicly exposed and that was a different one. That was Covevi. I talked about Covevi last week. What was this? Compromised last week. 43,000 records posted to a rival hacking forum. Data included IP and email addresses alongside salted MD5 password hashes. So that's bloody useless. And admin private messages. 61% of those were already in Have I Been Pwned. Small breach, 43,000 people. Impactful insofar as if you can attribute that back to activity of people on the forum, particularly illegal activity, which is what hacking forums do tend to do a bit of, then that might be problematic. And it only takes one person to sign up with a traceable email address or a traceable IP address, which sooner or later, everyone trying to hide this stuff does screw up somewhere or other. So that one wasn't good for them. Japanese scheduling app LifeBear had 3.7 million email addresses breached in early 2019. Breach also exposed usernames and salted MD5 password hashes. There's a bit of a theme going here. 16% of the accounts already in Have I Been Pwned. So this was a Japanese service. That's a much more sort of localized thing than, say, something used by Americans and English people and Australians. So you do tend to have a much lower prevalence of existing accounts and Have I Been Pwned. I'm usually seeing somewhere between the 50 and 70% range, which you'll see on the others in a moment. So LifeBear's in there now. Now, incidentally, on that one, that was part of a trove of different breaches which all emerged early last year. So as these, when I say emerged, appeared on the dark web and then obviously just more recently circulated more broadly. So for things like this, it does make my life a little bit easier when it's already been in the press, because it's like, well, I don't have to do disclosure, which is good. Now, next one. Art website Artsy had 1 million accounts breached in 2018 before being sold online. IP and email addresses, names, SHA-512 password hashes, which is a bit unusual. Don't normally see SHA-512. 82% already have been pwned. And again, this was part of a big corpus of various breaches which appeared for sale last year. So Artsy's in there now. Pet care delivery service Petflow had almost 1 million accounts breached in 2017 before being sold online. I've been busy this week. Exposed data includes email addresses and unsalted MD5 password hashes. 91% already have been pwned. So that's a very, very high prevalence there. Now, that was sort of an odd one too, because I've had people send me alleged Petflow breaches before and they didn't check out. So this one did check out, and I've spoken at length before about how I do data breach verification. So so Petflow went in there. Now, the one that was the largest and the most interesting in many ways this week was LiveJournal. LiveJournal. Now, I've had to say, new alleged breach. LiveJournal data is broadly circulating, contains 26 million usernames and email addresses that exist on the service. Explain what I mean by that in a moment. Alongside plain text passwords, data is used in attacks against Dreamwidth. It should be Dreamwidth, my typo, which is a fork of LiveJournal. 58% were already in have I been pwned. Now, this was a bit of an odd situation because someone sent this to me probably about a week ago. And when I started searching around for references to a data breach of LiveJournal, I found a tweet from a now defunct data breach service that appears to have been taken down because it was a bit shady. And the only other reference I found was a Wikipedia page for LiveJournal with the bit about assumed breach, which was basically just a tweet from me saying, I'm hearing lots of reports of a LiveJournal breach. Can anyone verify it? So the Wikipedia page, it's kind of funny just to find yourself when you search for a Wikipedia page. But couldn't find anything reliable, so I actually asked the question. And actually, just to be clear, when I was going through this data, every single time I took like a username or an email address and I checked it against LiveJournal, it was verified. And what I mean by that is, let's say it's a username and I try to create a new account with that username and it says, no, sorry, you can't have it. This username already exists. And anyone that I pick from the breach returns that same result. Anyway. I had a bit of a chat with the folks at Dreamwidth with a D, and they said, look, they've been seeing lots of attacks against their accounts, I think beginning in about 2018. Apparently there's a lot of crossover because they're a fork of LiveJournal. And incidentally, if you don't know what LiveJournal is, if you're like me who didn't know before all this, it's a social media platform that appears to have come from Russia and then has some adoption in other parts of the world too. But look, eventually I went and loaded that into Have I Been Pwned. Dreamwidth did come out with a statement which was not particularly encouraging. It was a very short statement saying, you know what I should do? I should actually find what it was. I didn't tweet it because I was just like, you know, maybe this is one that I can just sort of let sit there. It doesn't really need any more attention. Let's see, here we go. News.livejournal.com. So LiveJournal said, see how legit this sounds. Okay. Just realized. So the first thing you see on the screen is just like matrix. It's not even like binary, but like matrix crazy characters and stuff in green on a black background on the screen because, of course, there's a data breach. This is how you know, because it's green. Dear friends, we feel the necessity to address recent questions regarding LiveJournal security. We consider security our main priority, and you know what's going to happen immediately after anyone says that, and are constantly paying particular attention to when developing new features and updating old ones. This is definitely not an English first language statement either. We are keeping track of the information distributed in the internet and want you to feel safe. We analyze data appeared and can say that the data may be compiled using different sources and mostly falsified. We encountered cases of brute force attacks in 2011, 2012. We've implemented different counteraction and improvements since then to help ensure the security of accounts. Within the past 8 years, we have switched to HTTPS for all pages. Good. Improved password storage mechanisms, mechanics. Implemented suspicious activity detecting systems which tracks and blocks suspicious logins. Maintain monitoring for vulnerabilities, both with LiveJournal's code and third-party software employed by us. Recommended all our users to update their passwords at least once per 6 months to use different passwords for different. So we don't do that anymore. That's anyway, let's not get down to that whole thing. Additionally, we are currently developing two-factor authorization. So, okay, 2FA, good. I don't know that really addresses this problem. Anyway, it's just, and the very last part of this, because this is how long the entire disclosure is. Following these security procedures, we have also disabled passwords that haven't been updated for several years. If your password has been disabled, you can get a new one using the forgot password option in the login form. We apologize for any inconvenience, but this was a necessary measure. Should you need assistance in regaining access to your account, please submit a support request. So it really hasn't addressed the actual underlying problems, and it hasn't also concluded why it is that there are tens of millions of records there with credentials that do actually work. This does not look like a credential stuffing attack, certainly not at those volumes, and also the uniqueness of the accounts that are in there. So there is a lot of very specific LiveJournal aliases within the email addresses too. So I would take that disclosure with a grain of salt, is my professional opinion. Anyway, that was LiveJournal. So that's out there. One more. So yesterday, Wishbone. Now, Wishbone is a compare anything app where you can, like I ran the app very, very briefly because that was the only way I could see to actually check whether email addresses existed via the password reset feature. And it's like, here are two girls wearing a necklace. Which one do you like? Okay. Like, I'm not actually sure what the value proposition is, but you know, whatever. They got 10 million people on there. Also present was names, phone numbers, dates of birth, genders, and unsalted MD5 password hashes. MD5 is rocking it this week. 63% already in Have I Been Pwned. Now, the tweet doesn't do justice to the complete volume of data that was actually in there because it was massive. So here are all the data attributes that were in the Wishbone breach. I've just got to go to Who's Been Pwned here and do a search for Wishbone. Auth tokens, mentioned that earlier. Dates of birth, email addresses, genders, geographic locations, IP addresses, names, passwords, phone numbers, profile photos, social media profiles, usernames. So apparently you need to leave your gender and your date of birth in order to compare two photos. Like, and now it's leaked out over the web along with almost 10 million other accounts. Now, this is also Wishbone 2020. There is a Wishbone 2016 breach, and this must be about the fourth, fifth, sixth breach that has happened a second time to the same organization. So that does seem to be a bit of a pattern. Okay, last things. Question here from Finlay, evening from the UK. Any news on the EasyJet breach, which also included card details for some users? From what I've read, it sounds like a compromised third party without the use of SRI. SRI, of course, being sub-resource integrity, which allows us to have a hash of an external resource such as a JavaScript file or a CSS file. And if that external content changes and the hash no longer matches, then the content gets rejected and isn't run. So SRI is an amazing defense against things like external files being changed in order to, let's say, inject CoinHive. So we've seen this happen before. This happened with a product called BrowseLoud a couple of years ago. And the external file changed. It dropped in a crypto miner on every single page that was embedding this external content. Bad things happen. So the sort of canonical defenses for this now is sub-resource integrity and content security policies. And using the two of them together, good results. Obviously, this is not something that has happened, as best we can tell, in terms of the EasyJet situation. This would also imply Magecart. Magecart has been very good at getting keyloggers on pages with credit card details. I honestly haven't read any more detail about the EasyJet situation, but it does seem, from what I've heard, to comply with those patterns. So, yeah, no more on there. Incidentally, that was the same sort of thing happened to British Airways, wasn't it? So British Airways was very much Magecarted in the same way. So something about airlines over that part of the world. Okay, look, I think I'm pretty much there. We've been going, about 40 minutes. So, again, I'm going to keep doing these live because I'm not going to be going anywhere. And in all honesty, I'm very confident I won't be going overseas again this year, at least not beyond maybe New Zealand. There's talk of us having a bubble, like a travel bubble that covers like Australia and New Zealand and possibly other parts of South Pacific. But I can't see myself going anywhere beyond that And frankly, I'm just hoping that, like I said earlier, I can actually get to the snow and I can get interstate. And if that doesn't happen, I'll just sit out here in the sunshine and enjoy myself. So not too bad either way. All right, so thank you very much for watching this one. I will come and do it at the other end of the day on Friday next week to pick up more of the European audience. See you, folks. Mm-hmm.